do our 2 minutes of opening statements, and we'll start with Linda Duncan.
All righty. Oh, well, my name is Linda Duncan, and I was a teacher and a coach and a sponsor, club sponsor, and a newspaper sponsor, and a high school assistant principal for 31 and a half years with JCPS. And for the past 8 years, 8 and a half years, I have been the District 5 representative on the school board. And within that, 6 years I have spent as a director on the Kentucky School Boards Association Board of Directors. I am very proud of the progress that the district has made while I have served on the board. And I kind of break it into three parts. My opponent sent a mailer out that kind of took my thunder here, but it was, I call it the ABCs of my service on the school board. And it concerns achievement, improving, as evidenced by the fact that we've risen from 32nd percentile from last year to the 51st percentile this year. Barriers are being addressed that poverty imposes on our students in a way that we have not done before, very creative and new. And two examples of how that's done is the Louisville Linked and initiative and the transition center programs that we've put in our schools. But also during this time period, we've had an expansion of our expansion of the options that parents have for choice in schools. And that's gone from neighborhood schools that have small clusters to career tech high schools that serve regions that are five-star high schools, and our innovation program. So we have a lot of choice going on and a lot of progress, and I'm proud of that and hope to be able to continue that.
Thank you. Richard Brown, opening statements.
Thanks, Devin. I appreciate the opportunity to be here tonight. As my opponent said, she introduced herself, and she's talked about some of the things that were important to her and what she said, but let's be clear. Some of the poorest kids in the entire district live in my neighborhood. And in that neighborhood, on Linda Duncan's watch for the past 9 years, test scores at Semple have now dropped. Semple is in the lowest fifth percentile of schools in Kentucky. Olmsted North, fifth percentile, test scores dropped. So when we talk about these initiatives, let's talk about the record. Let's talk about 45 audit findings on an audit that she didn't want to have happen in the first place because it would expose what's going on in Jefferson County Public Schools. My name is Richard Brown. I have 20 years of professional experience, much of that dealing with public sector budgeting, a nine-figure budget. I'm not intimidated by those numbers. I have experience in fund accounting. I have experience in personnel. I have experience in collective bargaining. If somebody says that I'm a union buster or somebody says that I'm anti-collective bargaining, they need to check the collective bargaining agreement that I have in my pocket from when I was a Teamster steward in the 1990s. People are going to talk about what the duties of the board is. You don't have to look any farther. The duties are mentioned right online. All you got to do is go to KRS 160.290. And it will say to you that the board will have general control and management over the schools. It will tell you that the schools, they will have control over the school funds. My opponent said in the Courier Journal interview that it takes only 9% of her time dealing with the budget. I can give you 1.4 reasons why we need to pay better attention to our budget, because if you don't have money for early childhood education, if you don't have money to help the poor kids in this community, run your schools better. Thank you.
All right, and because there's only two of you, I will ask the next question of the person who just went, and just to be fair. Specifics to what the biggest challenges of JCPS are, what's the biggest challenges that we're faced with here?
Well, to be honest with you, where do you start? Bullock County just passed us up with regard to the quality of their schools. Amazon's hiring everybody. Guess what? They're located in Jeffersonville across the river, and they're located in Bullock County outside of Jefferson County, because we can't attract jobs into Jefferson County because our school system is not marketable to the nation. 45 audit findings and mismanagement, 200 recommendations. We don't even have banking contracts. We have a lot of problems with our school system. We have a great deal of problems with our school system. We reduced the zero tolerance policy on suspensions to make our schools look better. I personally sent my child, my oldest child, to Semple Elementary for kindergarten. In the middle of the year, they moved him to first grade to read with the first graders. We were lucky enough to get him into Schaffner Elementary, which is a traditional program, which is, by the way, ranked in the 99th percentile, and is only 3 miles away from Semple Elementary. During the first 6 weeks conference, they said they were worried about Ethan. They said he's behind. Now, if he was ahead of the first graders, ahead of the class in kindergarten and in the reading with the first graders, but then he's behind, where are the other kids? Well, everybody's out high-fiving about these test scores. I got kids in my neighborhood that are hurting. All four middle schools in this District 5 are ranked in the 20th percentile in Kentucky or lower, and that is absolutely unacceptable. 9 years. First day, I'm going to be knocking on doors. I'm going to be attending SBDM meetings. I'm going to be talking to parents. I'm going to be doing whatever I have to do, or I won't show my face in 4 years. We have to make our schools better. You want to have better tax income? You want to be able to, instead of raise taxes on people every year, you want to have more income? Build your economy. Make this community more attractive to business.
Thank you, Ms. Duncan. The same question. What are the biggest challenges that we're faced with?
Well, I think the biggest challenge for me personally is always going to be safety. I want to keep the violence that sometimes is in the community out of the buildings, and that's a challenge sometimes, and I want to be able to keep the social media abuse out of our buildings. So I think for me, one big challenge is safety. Another big challenge is our funding. Over the past, since 1994, the state has reduced its support from 54% of our budget to 32% of our budget. And in the meantime, we have had specific cuts to flexible focus funds and various programs that we have that we depend on. We have unfunded mandates, such as the salary increases for the teachers that we have to deal with, and then we have unfunded mandates such as the retired teacher health insurance, and we have underfunded mandates coming at us from the federal government with the IDEA and Title I funding. 40% was supposed to be the funding from the federal government, and we received 19% from that. So funding is a big challenge. Inadequate funding of ESL and inadequate funding of early childhood, these are big challenges for us. And in addition to that, the impact of poverty, I think, on our system presents a huge challenge. I mean, we have kids with inadequate food, inadequate medical care, inadequate early childhood education experiences, and unstable families. So those present the biggest challenges for us.
Ms. Duncan, up to 1 minute for this next question. What qualifications or skills do you have that would make you a great school board member for the next 4 years?
I think my experience with school has been a big feeder for me, but not only the experience as a school teacher and as an administrator, but also on the school board itself. I've been through many trainings as a part of Kentucky School Boards Association requirements. I have 240 some hours that I've completed in training concerning the budget and concerning superintendent evaluation and various other topics. So I think the experience and the training make me a good candidate and a good representative.
Thank you. Same question, 1 minute.
Thank you very much. Yes, Ms. Duncan does have experience in schools, 45 audit findings, failing schools. I am a manager, 20 years of professional experience. I know how to balance a budget. Let's talk real quick about the salary increases. Only 1% was mandated. The other 1%, folks, the other 1% was paid from a cash reserve. It wasn't even budgeted. And Ms. Duncan, in one of the debates recently, said that taxes basically are going to have to go up because they have to pay for the unfunded salary increases they put in. She talks about poverty. Get the kids out of poverty. Improve the schools. If you want to get kids out of poverty, improve the schools. Give them an opportunity in life. What makes me qualified? 20 years of professional experience, fund accounting experience. I was a shop steward for 4 years on the shop floor of UPS with 1,200 Teamsters on a daily basis. I'm not afraid to take the heat to make our kids better and our schools better.
Thank you. This question can be answered in up to 2 minutes, and we'll go with you, Mr. Brown. Question comes from the audience. Dr. Hargan, superintendent, recommended not to increase taxes this year. Do you agree with this recommendation? Why or why not?
Of course I agree with it. But let's be honest with you. What's the reason why it was done in the first place? It's an election year. You don't raise taxes in election year. You raise taxes in election year, and no one's going to vote for you. So they didn't raise the taxes this year, which was a good thing, but then they turn around and kick the can down the road. So now you have 1% that was unfunded, that was mandated by the state. Okay, that's fine. You should be able to absorb that if you clean up the mess and get all the salaries and administrators making well over $100,000 a year, get that taken care of. We have kids that don't even have textbooks they can take home. My daughter and my son don't have a civics book so they can actually take home, and they're at Male Traditional. Let's talk about safety. Right now, you can walk in to a school. If you go in to know, you would go into a specific area, and you're secured, and you can't get into the student area. So we're talking about money. We're talking about not raising taxes. I would actually support doing funding for infrastructure improvements, but I'm sorry. We need to make our community more marketable. Amazon's hiring. Amazon is hiring in Jeffersonville and Bullock County, not in Jefferson County. I yield my time.
Thank you. Up to 2 minutes, Ms. Duncan. The question of taxes.
The question related to why we chose not to increase taxes.
In your case, yes. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that was a deliberate decision. I didn't vote for tax increases last year either, because we have a very healthy fund balance. And to me, as long as we have a healthy fund balance, it's difficult to go to legislators and say that you need more and more when you have that healthy fund balance sitting there. And right now, we've reduced it this year. It's gone down to $50 million. The other balance that we have set aside takes care of two pay periods, and that's perfectly encumbered. But the $50 million that we have now, as a result of reducing it, $14 million from the budget proposal for this year, is adequate funding for this year. But we cannot take a $14 million cut into our deficit every year. This year, I thought it was a good idea to spend down our fund balance. It is hard to ask for more money when you are sitting there with lots and lots of money that the legislature knows about.
Thank you. Next question for Ms. Duncan. Up to 2 minutes for this question. This comes from the audience. What does being a priority school mean to you? And a second part of the question, what steps are you willing to take to make priority schools a true priority in this district and JCPS as a whole?
Well, a priority school is a school that has students who struggle a great deal and are not scoring at the levels that we would like for them to score. But there are oftentimes lots of explanations for why those scores are the way they are. He uses the reference to Olmsted Academy North. Olmsted Academy North dropped 1 point this year in its target. It had 48 languages spoken in that building, and there are 30% kids who are special needs kids. So it's the usually a priority school has a high concentration of kids who need special attention and special effort to catch them up. So priority schools, we have to approach them in the way of targeting interventions and doubling resources lots of times if we could. Resources to go into those buildings to allow them to meet the needs of the students that they have. That's one of the reasons the Olmsted schools have been strengthened the way that they have is that desire to double the resources, or not double, but at least do as much as we can in terms of resources to lower class sizes and allow kids the opportunity to have targeted interventions and extend their learning time. Priority schools need special things, and they need extra time in their learning. So I think that the way that we're dealing with our priority schools is having an impact, as we see that many of them are ready to come out with priority status right now. They just need one more year of their data.
Thank you. Up to two minutes. What does being a priority school mean to you? What steps are you willing to take to make priority schools a true priority in the district and JCPS as a whole?
Priority schools, as defined, they need attention. Yes, there are students in those priority schools that need attention. I live in that district. I hear all the ethnicities. I hear the languages that are spoken. Just go to Value Market just down the street from me. It's a wonderful place to go if you want to get some culture. I love it. It's great. But here's the problem. Let's just talk about what you just said 3 minutes ago. We had a $50 million fund budget, but yet funding is a problem. So they chose to give the raise to teachers during an election year, not raise taxes during an election year. You have priority schools, but you want to blow and you want to get rid of some of that money. But then we just talked about the fact how these priority schools need resources. You can't take that money, the $14 million, and over a multiple year basis, put that into the priority schools to help them to reach their goals, to help those students. 1 point, that's a child. That's not a point. That's a child. That's a child's future. So I'm sorry, I'm not going to dismiss that as being dropped 1 point. It was an absolute point. It wasn't that they didn't meet their target. Their scores dropped. That's serious. That's my neighborhood. That's simple. It's right down the street from me. I know those kids. I take that personally. So if you want to go blow some cash, instead of blowing it on teachers, which I love teachers, Jane Gillum, I wouldn't be up here today if it wasn't for Jane Gillum. She had me get up in front of my junior high school class and actually give an argument of why we were the bad guys in the Mexican War. That gave me enough courage to stand up in front of people. I want to reward LeBron James-style teacher, superstar teachers. But let's be honest. If that is a priority, then we need to prioritize.
Thank you. Up to 1 minute for this question, Mr. Brown. Do you support charter schools? Why or why not?
Me first?
Yeah.
I have said openly, I have said it, I'll say it again to make sure that I'm consistent. Charter schools is not my first choice. It is my second choice. I prefer to work with JCTA. I prefer to work with principals. I prefer to work with the board. I prefer to work with the community to see what we can do to improve our schools. But we have a union leader right now who's being paid from taxpayer money, and then that saves JCTA money, so then they can go put it into political campaigns. I got a problem with that. John Stovall is the Teamster representative for the bus drivers. He's not paid from taxpayer money. Brent McKim is. So here's the bottom line. I don't want to go that direction, but if I can't get changes and if the legislature gives me that option, I'm in.
Thank you. Up to 1 minute. Charter school question. Do you support charter schools? Why or why not?
No, I don't support charter schools. It's just an effort to privatize and for profit and to segregate our kids according to race or ability or socioeconomics or religion. It's not an effort to support the learning of all kids, because the only kids that wind up going to charter schools, the only ones they can afford to educate, are the ones that have the least need. So they drain the resources from the public schools to support the kids in the charter school. And no, I'm not a supporter of that. The resources need to be where the kids are. Charter schools don't serve all the kids.
Thank you. Ms. Duncan, next question, up to 2 minutes. What are the issues that are specific to your district?
Well, we are, I have several schools that fell into that priority status right off the bat, because we are kind of victims of the system that draws kids away from the neighborhood schools. Our middle schools and our high schools did not have the benefit of those advanced programs for years, and so those kids sought other schools at other places, and who was left in our schools were not your highest achieving kids. So we fell into priority status. This district created a lot of its priority schools by this system of magnets and traditional schools, but I think the biggest problem that we face in our district, or the biggest issue, is the support of kids who are in high poverty, and that requires various fundings that we do pursue. But we have, like right now, we have, I think many of our schools in my district are on the free breakfast, free lunch initiative that came from the federal government this year, and we have attempted to benefit from the bus program that visits places in the summer and distributes meals to kids. But I think my district suffers a great deal from poverty status, a high poverty status, and especially with an immigrant population that's moved in. And so it's a challenging district that requires extra resources.
Thank you. Mr. Brown, up to 2 minutes. What are the issues specific to your district?
Thank you very much. Fifth percentile, simple. Middle schools, lower 20th percentile in all Kentucky schools. I think that pretty much speaks for itself. But let's talk about what was just said. I'd like to respond about charter schools. Apparently, Mrs. Duncan doesn't know how to go into Google and type in New Orleans. New Orleans is full of charter schools. No schools, they serve so well. The kids that are in poverty, I mean, I'm beside myself and just couldn't believe what I heard. African-American students, if you don't think that, if that's a problem, why don't you go talk to some of the African-American leaders in this community? And some of them are talking to me, they're like, yeah, we want charter schools. We absolutely want charter schools. Does anybody in this room know of, or possibly even gonna be on the internet, Vergara versus California? I think that's how you pronounce the first word. They just ruled that the teacher tenure system is unconstitutional. It violates the Children's 14th Amendment because it allows teachers to not be relocated in areas of poverty, but instead can transfer when their seniority number comes up to schools that are more affluent areas. Therefore, you don't have teachers with a number of experience going to these poverty areas. And this is the kind of environment that we have here. This is coming. This is coming here. You want better, you want more kids, you want the kids off the free and reduced lunch? Well, if we had better schools, Amazon is hiring. They're not hiring in Louisville. They're hiring in Jeffersonville. That tax money is going to Clark County. They're hiring in Bullitt County. Bullitt County schools, you know where they just got ranked. So we have a lot of challenges facing the children in our community, and I'm going to be out there hitting them hard. Yes, we have poverty. Yes, we have schools that are failing. I'm going to be at the SBDM meetings, and I want to know what the plan is. I was on SBDM at Johnson. We eliminated an assistant principal's position. We got instructor threes in there, and Johnson met its goals, exceeded its goals, and they're serving Mail, and they're serving Butler, and those kids are shining, and every child in this district, and magnet schools, we'll talk about that later.
Thank you. Up to 2 minutes for this next question, Mr. Brown. This comes from the audience. The audit report addresses the amount of funding JCPS spends in the district offices, recommends less be spent in central administration, more be spent in schools. What would you cut in JCPS's district offices to free up resources and funds for the school?
I think anybody that just went in there with a pair of scissors and started cutting, I think that would absolutely be crazy. You want to make smart cuts. I would like to work with some people in the HR community. It's like I've talked about with the PEGS, the PGES, the evaluation for teachers, and how it's a toothless calico cat. And then if you give it to a truly bona fide private sector HR professional, they would throw that multiple page thing on the ground and laugh and stomp on it and say it's not worth the paper it's written on. That's because they know what they're doing. I would do the same thing. I would want to know and hear from experts that can come in and help us be more effective and more efficient. I just was looking up Cobb County and seeing what they were doing, because since we don't have benchmarks, even though the University of Louisville and other universities and other schools have had benchmarks for decades, but Jefferson County Public Schools doesn't have any benchmarks, or didn't definitely before the audit. If you look and see what they're doing, they are running far more efficiently. They have a more diverse community, and their test scores are higher. So I don't want to hear that. That's an excuse. If Beverly Johnson were here, I remember somebody saying that at an SBDM meeting. Well, you don't know these kids. She got bent out of shape. Real quick, magnet schools. We send our children, we sent our child away, children away from Simple Elementary. Parents do not send their children to magnet schools. You heard me. They send their children away from failing neighborhood schools. If the neighborhood schools were successful, if they were not unruly, if they were doing their jobs, you wouldn't have to bus kids all over the community. That's the problem. Look at the magnet schools. Yes, look at the traditional schools. And by the way, Ms. Duncan just said something about, made kind of a derogatory remark about traditional schools. It was only just a few weeks ago in a board meeting that she said she wanted to turn Olmsted into a traditional school. And now she's having problems about how traditional skimming it. So let's double talk.
Ms. Duncan, up to 2 minutes. What would you cut in JCPS's district office to free up resources or funds for schools?
Well, first of all, I never said that I wanted to turn the Olmsted schools into traditional schools because they would lose their attendance areas, so no way would I say that. Central office, we 3 years ago, Dr. Hargens undertook the effort to cut positions in terms of not filling when people retired or leaving positions open when people left those positions. So it wound up creating a savings of $4.4 million, and that happens every year. The audit, of course, details were 3 years old, so he missed that adjustment that we've made. We've made a tremendous effort at sending as many people into the schools as we can rather than holding them at central office. They are now working within the schools. We have resource teachers that have become goal clarity coaches, and we have administration, our assistant principals in our elementary schools. And we have made a tremendous effort to aim resources not in central office but to the schools, and to the tune of 77% at this point. But Mr. Edelin's information again was old. I think he quoted 52% was old, 3 year old information. So we have followed that path of trying to decentralize our services and send them out into the schools, and that's where you'll find many of our assistant superintendents during the school day as well, not sitting in the office but out working in the schools.
Thank you. Up to 2 minutes for this next question. Ms. Duncan, what will you do to support the remediation or replacement of underperforming teachers? This comes from the audience.
In the professional growth and effectiveness system, a teacher can be identified, and if that support is required or needed, then there are many avenues that the supervising administrator can follow, and it has to follow a path of documented evidence of effort. And I think to remediate teachers it requires that we expose them to resources that will help them gain the skills that they need. So we have to refer them to resources that they need, to follow up with the work that they do, and to continue to set goals for them and follow their progress toward those goals. And attempt to form teachers rather than chase them out of teaching, but attempt to make teachers into good teachers rather than immediately dismissing them, because many of them just need extra support and extra time to develop into good teachers. So I think it's to our benefit to take that time and invest it in them and allow our administrators to use their skills to help teachers become better and track that along the way during the year. And if it doesn't work, then we have a deficiency process that can be followed to change them and change their profession.
Thank you. Up to 2 minutes. What will you do to support remediation or replacement of underperforming teachers?
The reason why Mrs. Duncan doesn't like charter schools is because she doesn't like accountability. In a charter school, if you're an underperforming teacher, there's ways to help people that if you have it in your gut and you got the right attitude, we can help those. But you know what? If you don't have the attitude, if you say, like what have my daughter's teacher said one time, and I quote, "You should have learned this in fifth grade, and I don't have time to teach this to you." That's sinful. Now, Jennifer Smith, who's my son's English teacher at Mayo, she sends me an email once a week and tells us exactly what they're going to be working on that week and what she would like for the parents to work on with the child. And then on top of that, when she asks the students, were you all taught this? Did anybody teach you this? And when there's no's and shakes or the heads are down or whatever, she looks at them dead in the eye and she says, "It's okay, pardon. I'm going to teach you." Now that's a teacher. The first one I just mentioned before, that's not a teacher. That's somebody who's standing up earning a paycheck. The PGES system, the PEG system, isn't worth the paper that it's written on. And if you don't believe me, ask some of the principals around this community. They'll tell you it takes up to 2 years to get rid of a teacher right now under this new system. And that's just for the first year because there's adaptation. But yes, there's a ton of paperwork and a ton of process that has to go along with the process. Look, I'm a former shop steward. I don't like bully bosses. I don't like politics in the workplace just as much as anybody else. And if you've got a good teacher that's going there with every day and working hard and spending their own money and staying after school and helping out a student, I will go to the mat to help them and protect them and do what I can to keep that person in here. But at the exact same token, if I got somebody in here who doesn't care about the kids at all, they've been here or they haven't been here a long time, they got to go. But unfortunately, we need to be able to have the laws and have the back to make the changes to get that done, and currently we don't have that. I'm going to fight hard to make a change for that because it's about accountability. Parents have to be accountable, students have to be accountable, taxpayers, law officials, and teachers.
Thank you. This next question, we've been talking about low-performing schools, is about high-achieving schools, and it comes from the audience. It's taken many years for several of our high schools to become high-achieving schools. What would you do to ensure the long-term commitment and strong work ethic necessary to create more high-achieving schools? Also, what funding changes will you support to ensure more high-quality choices for our students? Yeah, 1 minute.
Currently, if you notice from the test scores, traditional schools are rocking it. Now, I'm not talking about taking anything away from schools that serve students that have special needs or need more one-on-one attention. But right now, if you look at this board and see there's a lot of red, there's a lot of green. Congratulations, that's wonderful. But they're hiring at Amazon, and they're hiring across the river, and they're hiring south. They're not hiring here in Louisville. So what I want to do is, if you look at the applications, currently right now there's a waiting list to get into Schaffner and currently a waiting list to get into Carter. I want two more traditional schools west of I-65 to feed. There is a demand. My old union boss, Tom Trenum, taught me one time, Brownie, you can't learn anything with your mouth open. So our board isn't listening. If there's a demand for something, give it to the parents, give it to the students, give it to the taxpayers. Listen. You don't have all the answers. I don't have all the answers. Listen, and you won't be on the front page of the Courier, and you won't be on the internet, and you won't be on Voodoo or whatever all those websites are out there that trash some of the things that are done that are actually good, but they trash the things that are done. So the bottom line is, no, I don't want to take away from anything. I want to clean up 45 audit findings. She didn't even want the audit, so of course she doesn't. She's not going to be a big fan of it. But there are things that need to be cleaned up, and if changes have been done, show me the numbers.
Same question.
Would you repeat the question?
Sure.
Please?
What would you do to ensure the long-term commitment and strong work ethic necessary to create more high-achieving schools? And what funding changes will you support to ensure more high-quality school choices for our students?
Oh, it always disturbs me. We have an accountability system that ranks schools according to the achievement scores. And if you go through and track the who attends the highest scoring schools in our district, we have high concentrations of advanced kids. So the simple answer would be to create schools that attract more advanced kids in there so we can have those high numbers of advanced kids and maintain those high scores. The answer that I would prefer would be that we take schools that are serving a range of kids, not necessarily all high concentration of advanced kids, and really aim the resources into those buildings so that we begin to individualize the work of the students and it become about the growth of the individual student. And I think as long as we concentrate on individuals and trying to pull kids according to their needs and their weaknesses, whatever the learning has to be targeted based on their needs. And if we concentrate on taking kids from the levels that they are to higher levels, then we can bring more into that high-achieving category. But it's a distinct advantage in this district if you have been tested as an advanced program student then you move to a school that has many advanced program kids, then those scores tend to be higher, and that creates the difference among our schools.
Thank you, Ms. Duncan. Next question, up to 2 minutes. In recent legislation, Kentucky has raised the age that students are required to stay in school to 18. What would you recommend for programs and resources to retain and engage these students who would have otherwise dropped out?
We need many alternative paths for kids so that they can find themselves and find something that will engage them to remain in school or and remain productively in school. I think that the lack of funding that went with that bill is the concern for all of our schools. And even at that, how are we going to get those kids, if we don't have all those programs, how are we going to get those kids into the buildings that we have right now? So I think the effort has to be toward trying to develop our system of alternative schools. We have a good system with a wide variety of alternative options. And I think for us, it's a matter of counseling and working with those kids individually to make sure that we touch on either a career tech emphasis that they like or can buy into, or we direct them into programs that will allow them to stay at school part of the day and work the other part of the day. But I think we've got to really direct our resources at these kids, because otherwise we're going to be dealing with a lot of kids that need, we're going to be hiring a lot of people to chase them down to come to school rather than having them in school and developing their needs.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Same question.
I'm a product of Pleasure Ridge Park Area Vocational School, and this board back in the 90s took our vocational systems and basically just threw it in the garbage can. We currently have a shortage of folks that have trades. We don't have enough machinists in this Commonwealth. We don't have enough welders in this Commonwealth. But yet we're not serving, and we're not listening to the business community, and we're not responding to their needs. Yes, I agree with Mrs. Duncan. Yes, I would like to definitely move more toward alternative programs. Not everybody wants to be a PhD in chemistry. I sure didn't, still don't to this day, even though if you do have a PhD in chemistry, you can probably be guaranteed a job in this economy the way it is. I want to go back on something real quick. Let's talk about advanced. Once again, the board is not listening. People send their kids to traditional schools not because it's advanced, or they're advanced kids, or they're smarter than any other kids. We sent our children to traditional schools, Devin, because it has discipline and it has control. And I knew for a fact that while my children were with Dr. Tyree, or they were at with Miss Beverly Johnson, or they're over with Todd Barber or Jeff Wise over at Mail, I know that if somebody gives my kids any kind of grief or bullies them or treats them badly, I know they're going to be all over them. We did it for safety. It's the same book. It's the same book, same curriculum. Yeah, it's a little more intense, but the bottom line is ask the parents. Why are you sending your once again, they don't send their children to magnet schools. They send them away from the neighborhood school.
Thank you. Ms. Brown, we'll stay with you 1 minute to answer this question. Can you recall a decision that the board made that you would have voted, that you would have been in the minority and voted against it?
Probably, once again, the tax increases. Definitely I would not have voted for the tax increases. The tax increases I would have voted against for a number of years. I can elaborate on that all night long, but the bottom line is Amazon's hiring. I know it's a broken record. Amazon's hiring. It's not here. Gordon Food Service, they're hiring. Ford has talked about leaving before. And at one time, UPS had talked about leaving also. So once again, we don't have a business friendly tax base, and we don't have the schools that are why should Larry Ellison locate some of his Oracle folks here to Louisville?
Thank you, Ms. Duncan. A decision where you voted in the minority on a board approval.
Moving of the Phoenix School to Myers Middle School, I thought the need for the Phoenix School is much greater in the end of town where it is, and was being, the program was growing there, and I felt that I was afraid that if we moved that to a more central location, we would lose those kids who need it the most in the southwest part of the town or county.
Thank you. Up to 1 minute for this question. Ms. Duncan, do you think busing has been productive? This question comes from the audience educationally, financially, and emotionally.
Well, busing, the way that it was originally, was not, I was not a strong supporter of that when my children were engaged in it, but they did benefit from the experience. And I feel like over time, it's not, busing has changed. I mean, today's busing is about sending kids to places that they've chosen. It's not about busing to create diversity. And our diversity guidelines are so broad at this point that that's not even necessary. So I think the experience has been good. I do think we've benefited from it. I think we have a population that's benefited from that. But at this point, we don't even have busing the way that it used to be.
Thank you. Same question. Do you think busing has been productive educationally, financially, and emotionally?
I'm so glad that question was asked because I finally get to say something that I agree with Linda Duncan on. Mrs. Duncan, I apologize. Agree with her on. I remember going to church, real quick, I only got a minute. I remember going to church one Wednesday night in front of Valley High School and seeing the upside down American flag being carried and the rocks and all the stuff. And I remember hearing what all the people said. And even during this campaign, I've heard some things that I've just looked at people and said, no, that's not right. I'm committed to not returning to days of Plessy versus Ferguson. I do want stronger neighborhood schools, but I have to agree with Mrs. Duncan. I think it has helped the community greatly.
Thank you. Staying with you, 1 minute. Again, we have a lot of questions to go through, so I'm shortening a little bit. Do you support the Kentucky Core Academic Standards, known nationally as the Common Core?
A lot of folks that I've met with, they loathe it, they can't stand it, but here's what I'm going to throw it at you. And I actually think that Mrs. Duncan and I actually may agree on this one. What's in the middle of an apple? A core. And that's what it is. It's Common Core. You can add to it. There's nothing that says you can't add to it. It's a way of a dipstick to be able comparing us to other schools across the nation. Now, I know some people say that it's limiting and some of the math stuff in there is a little different than what we had when we were growing up, but it may need some revision, but I'm sorry. I think we do need a way to measure schools across the nation.
Thank you. Same question.
Well, I agree. A Common Core provides us a way to move everybody ahead at a pace that, that looks like other countries, and I think that we need a way to measure ourselves there. But I really do also believe that it requires some revision. I mean, I see the work that my grandchildren do, and when a parent is not able to understand the vocabulary of a math problem and to be able to provide help, it's kind of a little bit unsettling. So I do think it needs some revision and some tempering of the difficulty of it.
1 minute, Ms. Duncan. What's your understanding of what makes a good school board member?
I think a good school board member is connected to the schools that he or she serves, understands the way that things are being implemented in those schools, and has a good sense of the vision of the district and where we're going and how it's being played out within the schools. And I think a good school board member has to devote time to this position. To get ready for a meeting requires 8 to 12 hours sometimes, and I think that's you have to be prepared to devote the time and energy to doing this right if you're going to do this.
I do see some nods over here. What's your understanding of what makes a good school board member?
I agree with the vast majority of that. Yes, it does. I can see where it definitely does take a lot of time. And from serving on SPDM at Johnson Traditional Middle School, being involved in my community with the kids in my neighborhood, I used to be a workaholic, but I found out the way to best be a better dad is not to try to make a lot of money, but to be there for your kids. So I agree with that. If you go back and you look at state statute 160.290, it does talk about general control of management. I am a manager. But I do feel, once again, it's about listening to the schools and listening to the community.
And we will give up to 2 minutes for this question. This goes to you, Ms. Brown.
Uh-oh.
Gap issue shows great disparity between groups, especially students with disabilities. Mm-hmm. How do we address this and close the gaps between all student groups?
Well, once again, I admit I concentrate a lot on the 80-20. I do want to make sure that we do not leave our students behind that face either physical or mental challenges. I feel that that's very important. I feel every child deserves a quality of an education regardless of any type of ADA or any type of mental or a physical disability. I think that we do need to make sure that we maintain that, and we do need to provide the programs that are there for them. I know that at Johnson we had the ECE students that were there. It was very important to us that we make sure that we involve them in all the activities, make sure that they had the resources to do their jobs well. They are important parts of the community, and after they finish their time in our educational system, if we do things right, they're going to be productive citizens. So I do think that it's very important that we continue to put those resources toward those that do have physical and mental challenges. But at the exact same token, as I've said before, we need to definitely concentrate on making our school system run leaner and meaner. We have to have more accountability. We have to restore the confidence of our school board and restore the confidence of our school system back in the community. I won't say it again, but we've lost businesses to other communities. That means that we don't have tax base. We don't have a tax base. If you want to raise money, if you want to make sure that you can have money to have these programs, you have to have a tax base.
Thank you, Ms. Duncan. Gap issue shows great disparity between groups, especially groups like students with disabilities. How do we address this and close gaps between all student groups?
I think the whole tracking of gap scores and sometimes covers up what our individual groups are doing. We have the way that it's figured right now in the new accountability system. But, you know, the biggest gap in the whole system is between special needs kids at 20% proficient and our advanced program kids, which is 91% proficient. So, I mean, that's a huge gap. And these are tested groups. That's why they are in the groups that they are. And so I don't think the goal is to expect everybody to score the same. By a certain date especially. I don't think the goal is to do that, but I do think we are responsible for improving the scores of every child who is with us, and at whatever level that child is able to progress, that's what we should be doing. And I mean, that's what it is today. It's not about moving a group of kids. It's about individually moving each child to its full potential, or to his or her full potential. And I think as long as we're focusing on increasing that child and trying to improve that child to the highest level that we can get that child, I think that's the goal, and not to say that we're going to close that particular huge gap between those two groups.
Thank you. This will be the last question before we go to the final comments from both of you. Ms. Duncan, this question goes to you. 2 minutes. What's your position on the Magnet Schools of America recommendations, specifically the one to eliminate middle school magnet programs such as Mazik's MST program, Math, Science, Technology program?
Many of the recommendations were strange to me. I thought that the Magnet Schools of America didn't realize how we had set up our programs. You know, we have an exit strategy with our magnet programs, just like you're talking about traditional schools. Everybody wants in, or you have a lot of people who want in, but that's because they're able to exit those kids from those programs. The recommendation to change the math, science, technology program, I don't see a reason to do that. It's a good, strong program that feeds into there are other programs at Manual, and I think that I really don't see a need for that particular recommendation. I was more concerned really about their lack of understanding of programs at Manual, and thinking that the program itself, if we just moved the program to another site, that would be that all those people would follow that program to another site. And it just indicated that they did not understand how our schools select their kids. It's not a lottery in our magnet schools. That our schools select their kids and try and select the highest scoring kids that they can, so that they maintain that academic predominance. And I think the program at Mazik deserves to stay right where it is.
Thank you. Same question.
One of my recent roles, I worked in the Department of Surgery at the University of Louisville, and because of my background in personnel, I was the one who had to work on hiring folks. Trying to hire a researcher who has a PhD in biochemistry or has experience with islets, working with pancreas research, and finding somebody who's a citizen of the United States is doggone near impossible. So why, I agree 180,000% with Mrs. Duncan on this, why we would want to take a magnet school that is pulling and moving interested children, kids that are interested in math and science, and getting them in that environment where then potentially they can go on and maybe go to the PhD level, to the research level, even go on to medical school, why we would want to tamper with that in any way, shape, or form. I've completely, in my opinion, when it comes to that, if it's not, if on that situation, if it's not broke, don't fix it. We need more math and science graduates in our economy in the United States as a whole. We're having to bring folks from out of the country to fill many of those roles. And with 320 million people, surely we can interest folks in those fields and get them jobs in our economy and having them serve here in the United States.
Thank you so much. Closing statements, and we will start with Mr. Brown with 2 minutes.
Well, I just want to say thank you very much. I've actually appreciated being here. I've enjoyed the questions. I've enjoyed the debate. Enjoy the forum tonight. My children are fortunate enough to go to Louisville Traditional Male High School. It's ranked in the 99th percentile of all schools in Kentucky. I feel all children should have the opportunity to go to a school of that caliber. I've had teachers that have, wonderful teachers that have inspired me in my life. I can go down and name them, Miss Andrada, Miss Buckingham. I call them out all the time. Mr. Crabtree, because they're good people. I just had a mentor of mine, Mr. Frank Perkins, just recently passed away. He was a counselor at Pleasure Ridge Park High School, and we used to photograph weddings all the time, and we actually talked about the fact that once a teacher, always a teacher. So I respect teachers. I want to make sure that we take care of our teachers, but I want to take care of our students. I want our taxpayers to get a good return on the investment. I want our business leaders involved in our community and our schools and have confidence that they're going to crank out graduates that can start from day one and truly be college and career ready. So I ask for your vote. I ask for your confidence. We're going to work very diligently on reassessing some of these items on the audit, see exactly how far things have gone, see what kind of progress we've made, and see what kind of progress we need to make. But I can promise in 4 years, if I'm elected, things will be different. I appreciate the opportunity to be here tonight. Thank you very much. I yield.
Thank you. Ms. Duncan, 2 minutes, please.
Well, I also thank you for this opportunity to have a forum and make this discussion in front of people like this. You know, 79% graduation rate was reported. That was up 10% since we started this new accountability system. We have a 60.5% college and career ready rate, and that's up 28% since we started measuring it this way. We have a 19.1 ACT average score, which is a college ready average score, and it was up 1 point from last year, and everybody in the junior class takes the ACT. All groups improving, every group improving. Not at the same, a lot of them at the very same pace, but they won't reach proficiency on the same date, but they're all improving. And on my district, in my schools, we have all three of our high schools exceeded their goals, their targets, and improved 5, 6, and 7 points and increased their rankings. All three high schools did. The middle schools, 3 out of 4 met their targets that KDE had established for them. 3 out of 4 of the middle schools. And 9 of the 12 elementary schools met their targets or exceeded their targets. I had two schools, we have two schools, Medora Elementary in the 83rd percentile declared proficient. We had an elementary school, Auburndale Elementary, in the 93rd percentile declared distinguished. So our schools are doing very well in this district, and the others that did not make it, that did not make their goals, Simple missed by 1, Hazelwood missed by 0.2, and Lockoff missed by 0.7. So we're pretty close, and we're doing, the progress is there. And I just appreciate the chance to serve this district and hope that I can continue that kind of progress with all the schools.
Well, thank you so much to Ms. Linda Duncan and Mr. Richard Brown. Please join me in thanking them. And I hope you stay for the next and final District 3 forum. Thank you.